This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
We take up our treatment for ourselves and others. Let us try to realize as completely as possible that our work takes place in a universal medium which acts upon it intelligently and creatively, having all wisdom and all power to act, but which, by the very nature of its being, can only act by reaction and can only respond by correspondence or correspondence. Now, I've said a mouthful, believe it or not. Like they said when the late Mayor Hyland, who was not so terribly educated a man in New York, was entertaining the King of England, and they were driving up through Broadway. The King looked up one of the buildings. He said, "That must be the tallest building in the world." And Hyland turns around to him. He said, "You said a mouthful, King." Just one of our American mannerisms. If we can understand that every law in nature flows through the instrument provided, so far as you and I are concerned, doesn't matter how much water there is in the high Sierras, only as much will flow through as the pipe will hold, and in flowing through it will take the shape of the pipe, but the next thing, it will always deliver its stream at a level equal to the source from which it starts. To me, this is one of the great laws in nature and in physics that illustrate what I believe about the law of prayer or treatment. The source is infinite. The pipe is our own state of consciousness. And the flow is irresistible. And unless it is obstructed, like water, will reach its own level by its own weight. We do not push it or pull it or coerce or argue or intimidate it. That is the way it is, and that is the way it works. So you see, it responds by correspondence, by corresponding. Now this is exactly what Jesus meant, I think, when he said, "It is done unto you as you believe." He implied it would be done, that the thing will react. But since it reacts on our belief, through our belief, why won't it have to react as we believe? Just completely logical, completely commonsensical, and it is true of every law we know in nature. One of our great difficulties is, I was thinking so much about this yesterday, flying from New York to Los Angeles. We have lots of time to look out, see nothing much because there were clouds under us. And I was thinking, and every once in a while I'd treat something, and I thought to myself, how wonderful. Here we are up very high in the air, over 20,000 feet, flying along through space. No resistance much. The only resistance is what we're creating by solid objects. Or otherwise, I guess there'd be none. And somebody determined to use this law this way, Solomon was called a wise man. I guess he was. But he didn't have an airplane. Alexander was a powerful man, but he didn't have modern weapons, or probably destroyed the world then. And I thought, all nature waits our acceptance. We have to accept it, we have to believe in it, then we have to understand how it works, then we have to use it the way it works. One of the oldest sayings in the world is, nature unaided fails, and nature obeys us only when we first obey it. That's accepted in every philosophy and in every science on earth. And yet we do not quite as simply and directly and dynamically accept it in our own thought. And I thought yesterday, what is there in us? What is there in me if I say, this is the way it is, or I'm working for somebody and say, whatever there is there that doesn't belong, let it be removed. Why should it not instantly disappear as vapor before the sun? Because theoretically, it ought to. And I have no doubt, but theoretically it can. No one could have read of the miracles at Lourdes without knowing such things are possible. They are not possible because of Catholics and Protestants. The law of gravity, you know, never asked a man who fell off a cliff whether he was a Jew or a Gentile and say, I don't like the way you believe. Nobody ever heard of it. Neither does the God that is, or the law of God that is, question that. That's why Jesus said when they came to him one day, as people's disciples like to do, and said, we saw somebody up here casting out devils in your name. Now Jesus thought that's pretty good. They said, but of course we forbade them not to do it. Doesn't that sound human? Like the guy, the gentleman, I guess he was, but he didn't look like much of a one to me. He said, orthodoxy is my doxy. Heterodoxy is your doxy. Isn't that interesting? Now, theoretically, the law that you and I use, that acts upon our thought, it is done unto you, it is done unto you. Has no limitation. Doesn't know anything about big and little. It couldn't. It doesn't know anything about our little theologies. They come and go. They're all good. It doesn't know anything about our personalities as though we're this kind, a Brahmin, or a more or less belong to the common herd of human beings. As Lincoln said, God must have loved the common man since he made so many of them. That's real wit. Whimsical wit. But wisdom. If you and I could forget what we know and what we don't know and arrive at the simple proposition, this is the way it is, this thing responds by corresponding as a mirror. It's done unto me as I believe. I desire only that which is good. I wish only that which is good for anything or anyone. There is nothing in me that in any way, shape, or manner desires to hurt or limit or harm anything on earth. Then seems to me we ought to feel free to let our imagination roam in the field and the field of greater possibility. How do we know what might happen? says in the Bible they could not enter in because of their unbelief and because they limited the Holy One of Israel. But things out here take a very ominous proportion, gigantic shape, fantastic form, and because we do not see how an iceberg can be melted, we might not believe one ever melted. The non-resistant flow of the sun's rays, without argument, will do it. Just as soon as the iceberg gets in a temperature that makes it possible, and just as soon as our consciousness rises to that altitude which makes the greater good possible, so the potentiality, that is the power back of that good, flows into our expectant acquiescence. And behold, all things become new. Let us try that as we turn inward to the divine center within us and around us, which is God. And know that there is one life. That life is God. That life is the life of each one of us right now. I am that which thou art. Thou art that which I am. Perfect and complete, all the power that there is, and all the presence that there is, and all the life that there is God. The living Spirit, almighty, all-powerful, all-perfect, all-divine. Now we accept this. We believe that we are centers in the consciousness of God. We believe that we are centers in the essence of love and life and truth and beauty and power. We believe that each one of us is an individualized center, a little different, but with the same life. There is one mind, life, power, spirit, which is perfect, and it is flowing through us now. We are directed by divine intelligence. Every so-called problem is solved and melts into its own answer. There is no obstruction, no loss, no limitation, no image of the past to limit the future or destroy the present. In this universe in which we live, nothing in the past need influence the future or the present. If it did, there would be no advance in science or anything else. Every advance in evolution is the breaking down of the pattern of the old as it melts into the new, in a new formation, doesn't matter what we call it. Science has a name for it, but we're just saying to ourselves, behold, I make all things new. We expect love, friendship, the increase of joy, more beauty, more power, and more peace. We know new ideas, new thoughts, new ways of doing things are coming to us. What was a problem just a moment ago is dissolved. Its answer now comes on the wings of love with the speed of light and the power of the infinite into its own solution and the joy of its own accomplishment. Before they call, I will answer. Why, Jesus said, when you pray, believe you have it and you'll get it. It is nature's way. It is our desire that our life shall bless everything it touches, heal everything that's unwhole, bring joy to sadness and song for sorrow, and life for death, faith for fear, and beauty for ugliness. It is our desire that the eternal presence of love shall embrace everything we touch in life with a complete surrender. For there are no good and bad in the kingdom of the eternal God. Else God himself would destroy himself. There are not. Realizing that this body which we call our physical body and in which we believe is not detached from the spirit we announce, the flow of life, through our thought and imagination and will into this body, perfecting every organ, action, and function of it, and we let go of everything that denies that and affirms the divine presence here and now, this moment, and forever. And so it is how to use the principle. We've been talking about it now for near a half hour, so we'll go right on from there. We have decided in the previous three talks some very simple things which I'd like briefly to recapitulate to refresh our memory. First of all, we're alive and we're here. To what extent we are here, no one has discovered. But that doesn't matter. We didn't make ourselves consciously. We awoke and looked about us, and this is the way it was and is. And that continuously we discover new laws, and when we do, we can use them. They do not seem to reproach us for not having used them before. In the great story of the prodigal son, starts out by saying a certain man had two sons. One of them said unto his father, "Father, divide the portion that cometh unto me." And he said he divided his portion unto him. And he went into a far country and there wasted his substance on riotous living. And when he had spent all, he came into want, but no man gave unto him. I didn't know I could remember that much of it. Now, the thing that's interesting about this, because this is God and the laws of nature Jesus is talking about, as he always did, all of his parables were nature parables, likening the laws of the mind and the spirit to the laws of nature, because they'd have to be. Said, you say it's going to be a good day, for the sun sets in a certain way, and behold the lilies, and men do not gather grapes from thorns, and if you ask an egg, you will not receive a stone, and so forth. First of all, that's God or the universe, and we're the sun. And God does not argue. We say, do it this way, and even though it isn't good for us, it's done because we are bound by our ignorance until the day of enlightenment, which produces freedom. Now, Jesus was a Jew talking to Jews. The Jews didn't eat pork. It was a sanitary method. It had nothing to do with being, that's really what it was a very hot country. And so he went into the far country and he had spent everything. How soon a person separated from his source exhausts the very little supply he can carry upon his person. That's what Jesus is talking about. And then he had to work. He'd never worked, you see. I suppose it's dangerous to say it, but I don't think that labor is a part of the divine plan. I love to do things. Animals don't work and worry the way we do. And they seem to have fewer complexes. Walt Whitman, whom they thought was an old infidel, and now the world recognizes him as the greatest poet America ever had, said, "I like cows." He said, "You know, I never yet saw a cow down on its knees praying for God to save its soul." Now, Walt said that. I didn't. I wasn't that smart. But it's very remarkable. And so he had to hire himself, being a Gentile, out to Jews. Now, Jesus was a Jew talking to Jews. And to make bad matters worse, they put him to feeding the pigs. Now, that was tough for a little Jewish boy. And to make it even worse and add insult to injury, he would have filled his belly upon the husks that the swine did eat, but no man gave unto him. He couldn't even eat the garbage. Now, this is about as bad as a little Jewish boy can get. Well, he sits down and begins to, what is it all about? And he came to himself. He remembered something. Well, Jesus tells that to show that our whole process of evolution is that we come out of the central flame, as it were. We are a part of the living present. We go out to individualize. That's the nature of reality. We carry a divinity with us even though we forget it. Not in entire nakedness or out of forgetfulness or entire nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from heaven, which is our home, Wordsworth said. And that it is destined sometime for us to awake. And when we come back, when the young man come back, God didn't argue with him. He said, "Let's have a party." And the young brother who stayed at home, labored, perspired, stewed and fretted, got a psychological complex and a lot of inhibitions. He was awful mad because the unprofligate son, his good-for-nothing brother, had gone away and spent a lot of the money, and he was very much afraid that his young brother had a lot of fun, because he was what they call a sourpuss in these days, and they don't want anybody else to have any fun. Just cry with me and weep with me and die with me, because that's the way I like it. They are supreme egotists, as are all people who consign the rest of us to a country which is disagreeable to people who like it cold. They're just egotist. Now, so the father turns to the son who stayed at home. He said, "Why? Well, I don't understand you." He said, "Aren't you glad your brother is back? That which was lost is found. He has added to the occasion. It doesn't matter what he spent. We got plenty left." See, Jesus was talking about that which makes things out of itself, by itself becoming what it makes through a process that has no effort. How silently the acorn becomes an oak tree. He said, "Well, I don't understand you. Come on in and let's make merry." He said, "You know, son, thou art always with me, and all that I have is thine." He might have had a party every night if he'd wanted to. He didn't have sense enough to see it. This represents the two sides of our nature, and the whole story is to tell us and modern science bears it out. All evolution demonstrates it. Every new discovery substantiates it. Nature waits our recognition. It does it in our spiritual and mental natures, as well as our physical, and just as soon as we discover a new law, there it is, Jesus came to teach a new law of life, that it is done unto you as you believe. That all that the universe has belongs to you, that there is no law but your own soul shall set it, under the one great law of all life, that good shall come at last alike to all, that God never changes, that all that ever was or is or ever shall be now is, could we see it, and as much of it for us as we can believe in, can we accept it, but that which in our ignorance we reject does not seem to be true to us, we are bound by our ignorance till the day of enlightenment and freedom, and that there is nothing in the universe that holds anything against us today. Shalt thou be with me in paradise. This teaching went along with the teaching of Moses quite a ways, and did not deny, for Jesus' name he came not to destroy but to fulfill, and the fulfillment was the addition of what let us call the personal factor. Moses had taught an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, cause and effect, but because he believed in that, he believed we must work out the effects of evil and limitation to the utmost farthing, the fourth, third, and fourth generation. The Hindus had taught the same thing, but they called it karma, which means the fruit of action, which Anna Besant, their great modern disciple, said, binds the ignorant but frees the wise. Now Jesus understood all these, and the thing that he added to it that confounded both the Jews and the Gentiles, one equally with the other, was, he said, I'm not destroying it, but I'm telling you how to use it in such a way that the law which produced your diseases and your limitations and your fears and your doubts and your hells and your limbos and your purgatories and all of this other nonsense that the morbidity of stupidity or the cupidity of human avarice have generated to control those who deny their assertions. That's saying a mouthful. It's all of it true, too. Jesus blew the whole thing into a cocked hat. He punched it like you would stick a pin in a toy balloon. And, as we will say now, to make the sacred profane, the hot air went out of it. And he knew it. This they couldn't understand. Why, they said, everybody knows that everybody's got to suffer. This is the law. And the remarkable thing is that nearly 2,000 years after that, every single discovery in modern science tends to prove the spiritual and the intellectual philosophy of Jesus and of all the other great and good and wise. We are made sick by the very power that can heal us. It's a different way of using it emotionally. There's only one life principle. Everyone knows that today. The answer to every problem is in the problem. An iceberg will melt. That which is solid will become liquid. There is hidden in everything, even in a speck of dust, the power that created the planets. Why should we doubt that there is hidden in the mind of every man the whole secret of the universe, the imagination that conceived it, the power that projected it and the glory that thrills in it. Softness of the sunset, the glory of the early dawn, the strength of the wind and the wave, the majesty of the mountain, the stillness of the desert. The heart of Jesus, the imagination of Shakespeare, the intellect of Plato, and the beauty of Browning. These men didn't have different kind of brains than you and I have. They had a desire to use what brains they had. All brains are alike in that sense, the common denominator. Now, that isn't just a sweet saying. It is now known that every physical organ of the body, take the liver, everything has a certain rate of vibration. Now, let's say that my liver vibrates at rate 4. I don't even know what I'm talking about, but it would be something like that, so I might as well call it that. It isn't that at all, but we'll just say it's number that. Now, if you get the liver of an ox or an eel, a snake, a saint, or a sinner, a mud turtle, or a bird, or a fish, anything's got a liver, that liver will vibrate same rate that mine does. Now, why should I feel that I'm so much more liverish than the fish? I shouldn't. But we do. That's one of our stupidities. Now, I'm talking about profound things. You shouldn't laugh at the wrong time. But I don't want you to cry either. Somebody said to me the other day, you should not let people applaud. I said, when they stop applauding me, I shall stop speaking. Why do we wish to repress the little bit of enthusiastic spontaneity that the world has left us for fear we'll profane the Almighty? I think we'll glorify him. James Whitcomb Riley says, as it's given me to perceive, I most certainly believe that when a man's glad plumb through, God's pleased with him. Same as you. Well, if every liver vibrates to the same rate, I see only one reason, and that is that there is a universal generic prototype or pattern of liver in the universe itself. Now, strangely enough, but not strangely, that's been the teaching of every great deep philosophy of spiritual realization the world has ever known. And modern psychiatry, psychiatric counseling, psychological counseling starts with an identical premise, but it hasn't yet admitted it, for fear it will get religious, than which it hadn't rather be nothing less. It just can't take it. But a few people in psychology are beginning to write about religion because they cannot escape the universal prototype of everything that's individual. And all that means is this. You and I wouldn't be here if something hadn't got here first. That's all it means. You and I have only one mind, which is God, and we're using it, one law. Why then should it seem strange that our thoughts, our minds, are merely the operation of the universal mind in the individual being? Hear, O God, O Israel, the Eternal, the Lord, is one. Emerson, there is one mind common to all individual men. The Mohammedan saying, there is no God save Allah, and Mohammed is the prophet, it's all the same thing. The unity of good. Now then, all these things are true. We have discussed this, and we have said then our thoughts become things in the sense that they become a tendency in a psychic or subjective law of mind, which always tends to reproduce in body and in affairs that which is like the sum total of our unconscious thinking, which means the sum total of our thoughts, if we can accept that, the way to use this thing is very simple. It is merely find out what's wrong. Now, this is so simple, I almost hesitate to say it. Seems like I ought to say a lot of things that don't mean it, so that when I say what does mean it, it look as though what does mean it has some meaning behind it, because I've said what don't mean it for so long. That's the trouble with all of us. We all seem to have to become confused before we can be simple, until the concrete becomes so lost in the abstract that we look at it and don't see it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall guide me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. There is the grandeur of the simplicity of the prophet who couldn't help but sing of the omnipresence of the living God, his creator, and who knew that creator and created are one, just as Einstein knew that energy and mass are equal, identical, and interchangeable, just as Jesus said, who has seen me hath seen the Father, in essence, of course. All you would do then is to look at the thing the way it is and hadn't ought to be. Now, this is what people don't understand, but do it. You'll get a result and say it isn't that way at all. What will you convince? Nothing but yourself. What will you change? Nothing but your own thought. What will happen? The reaction to that, because of identification, that is, because you have said, I'm now praying for Mary Jones. She lives at 208 West 40th Street, New York, Atlanta, doesn't matter where it is, anywhere on earth. You identify the word prayer or treatment. If you just believe in ordinary prayer, you'd say, God, I want you to help the man over down there. You'd feel God knew where probably he was, is. And so it is in this. Then you make statements. Now, if you say, why, I don't know. If you say, how does it work, I don't know. If you say, why does it work, I don't know. If you say, explain it, I cannot. Can you explain love? Sentiment of affection? Can you explain truth or integrity or beauty or life? No one can. No one need try. It is. That's where we start. The truth is that which is. But naturally, if you have resolved the whole thing onto a mental and spiritual basis of thoughts and ideas, you must believe that the word you speak is the movement. To say, what I mean by this is, you say this word is the law of elimination to whatever doesn't belong. Try in your imagination and feeling without pushing or pulling or willing or concentrating, it's nothing to do with it. But if you say, this word is the law of elimination to everything that doesn't belong, try to feel that there is no difference between the words you are now speaking and the elimination that ought to take place as a result of the words you are now speaking. Now, Shakespeare says, I there's the rub. This is where it's difficult. I am not saying it isn't difficult. I think it's the most difficult thing in the world, but I do say it's simple. We seem to be dealing with such an intangible. I went through the nylon factory one time where they spin the nylon yarn at one of the great DuPont factories in Delaware or Maryland, wherever it was. Now, here is this water. They gave us a jar of it. We were there in a very fortunate circumstance. The superintendent spent a whole day with our party because it was a personal invitation. He said, now this is the way it starts. He says, what do you think it looks like? Bottle of water. It looked to me like a bottle of water in which you might have put a teaspoonful of cream and shaken it up. Just a little faint cloudiness through it. Well, I said, looks to me like some water with milk or cream. They have it up on the fifth floor, it gets heated up. Then it goes down into a cone on the next floor, and it's like a sticky mass. It goes down to the next one, and by this time it comes out like a belt, almost. Then it's ground up and goes down into the next one, so it looks about like grape nuts. Then it is melted and goes down to the next one, comes out through these little holes in this beautiful silk cloth. That's all there is to it. Well, I said, how is it more difficult to believe that a man's consciousness might get up on the roof and opening himself up to whatever you think God is, by the time whatever he thought God was got down through all the processes of his thinking, it would dissolve a cancer? I don't think it's any different. I don't think it's any more of a miracle, but we don't expect it to. And they say, throw a monkey wrench in the machinery. And that's why Jesus said, believe. The whole foundation, believe. We are living in a spiritual universe right now, governed by laws of intelligence, and intelligence acting is law. No less a person than Eddington said that. And Jean said it. What Emerson meant when he said the world looks to us like a solid fact. But he said to God, just a mass of liquid laws. Very remarkable expression. Therefore, a denial of a fact in our practice is scientific and effectual. I don't know why, other than that it is, but I would say that one kind of a thought will neutralize another. But I know that that denial is not made as though there were a real adversary, only as though there were a suppositional opposite. God has no opposites. Light is not dispelled by darkness, but the darkness is dispelled by the light. We have to believe that whatever the more affirmative factor is will take precedent over the more negative. We have to believe that. Therefore, we have to believe that no matter what the past was, the present can change it if our faith and our conviction announces a change. And Jesus said, when you pray, believe that you have and you'll get it. No different saying, plant the crops. If you want to get a harvest, set the hen. If you want to get a chicken, mix the dough and let it raise. If you want bread, paint the house if you want it painted. He's following exact law. Exact performance, perfect technique, and he knew it. And we are confused because we judge according to appearances. Jesus did not say Lazarus isn't dead. He did not say the multitude were not hungry. He did not say at the feast, the wedding feast, that they had not run out of wine. Jesus never denied any fact. He merely rose to a superior one. And he knew that no matter what it is, there's something that can transcend it. Now, whether we call that faith or conviction, I think it is both. I think it is a conviction and a faith united in something that's now demonstrated to be a fact and may be accepted by all of us, and is in America by 15 or 20 million people. This is no longer a light hid under a bushel. Just a question of now, of those who will get over all their superstition and fear and argument about who's right and wrong and begin actually to use it. And you can do it and I can do it just as good as well as anyone living if we believe we can, merely because it's something that acts upon our belief. All right, then you theoretically convert everything you want to change into a thought which is fluid, and with an opposite thought dispel it, and then affirm the presence of the opposite. Where there's confusion, you affirm peace. Turning from the confusion, but just to say peace, 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 isn't it, is to feel the presence of peace, so that what you feel announces the word of peace. Now, there's a vast difference. Very frequently in the years, people have come to me, particularly our own students, and they have said, what do you think makes a good speaker? I always say, well, I think a good voice will help. I think a good technique and training will help. These you can get ordinarily to some degree, but I always say, remember this, if you've got everything it takes objectively, and all of the personality and culture, and know all the words so they flow out just terrific, there's still the one rule you must never desert. Say what you are listening to and never listen to what you're saying. Some get it and some don't. But there will never be a good talk or good acting or good singing or good dancing or good art anywhere that's self-conscious. It overlooks the spontaneous, which is born out of the fire of the moment, because each one of us is, in a sense, a spark. Not only that came from that central flame, it is still attached to it. It's always true. Now, this is so completely so in treatment. You don't sit down and say, I'll say that word and I'll say this word. And that's why we can't give formulas. Our meditations are suggestions of how to use, like what I wrote there, which you, if you haven't got it, get it, how to give a spiritual mind treatment. But let the words, if you say God is all there is, God is peace, there is nothing but peace here. First, let yourself feel the peace that you think God is. Out of the fullness of the heart, the mouth uttereth speech. I think that's in the Old Testament, how true it is. If you say there is only one presence in the universe, what you say must bear witness to what you feel, and what you feel must announce what you say. My words fly upward, my thoughts remain below. Words without thoughts cannot to heaven go. How well Shakespeare must have understood that psychically or intuitively. Therefore, once you have the foundation, the how you do it is very simple. Here are a group of people, and they're bickering and fighting and disagreeing. Now you wish to demonstrate there's only one presence and one power and one mind and one law, and it's good, and it's harmony, it's in harmony with itself, and it isn't afraid of itself, and it's flowing in this situation, and there is nothing else. If you can establish that in your own mind and announce it, it'll uncover and straighten out or eliminate that which will not be straightened out. And you won't have anything to do about it. That's the way it works. If we can go out in our garden and pull up the weeds and leave the good plants, why we can't do it in mind? This is a mental garden, a spiritual soil, a soul productivity. And now, Do not waste your time asking theologians or scientists or psychologists if this is true. The ones who understand it know it is true. The ones who don't know anything about. And if the blind lead the blind, they'll both fall into the ditch. Don't waste your time asking any living soul for a justification of the faith that's in you, because it isn't faith. God and I in space alone, and nobody else in view, and where are the people? God, I said, and the dead, whom once I knew. You're alone with a great reality. This is spiritual mind treatment. So very simple. So remarkable in the profoundness and the depth, not only of its sentiment, but its action. The philosophy that is back of it, the great and the good and the wise of the ages have told, whether they understood his practice or not, which most of them didn't. But there it is. So simple. So very simple. This is the secret. That only the child in you can accept it. But let me ask you this. Is it the child or the adult that accepts the great realities? I went to see night before last in New York City one of the greatest performances I have ever seen, The Lark. It is the theater at its best. And I said to myself when I sat down there and said, I'm glad to be in a New York theater. I love it. New York means the theater to me, not the tall buildings or the dirt. And I said to the person that's with me, now, if I laugh or I cry, don't think I'm suddenly crazy and mind your own business, because if it's any good, I'm going to do both. That's what I'm here for. Why would you go to a theater and say, tain't so, tain't so, tain't so? It's only an act. You have to melt and flow and become liquid in life to everything that's real. Or a cold, hard granite barrier is set up. And though the eternal itself impinge upon time, not one faint of hope of immortality will enter the mind who refuses to accept it. But once let him open that upper region of his thought, and angelic voices in reality sing, and the light of heaven floods his consciousness with the dynamics of that creativity which existed before Abraham was and will continue when this material universe shall have been rolled up like a scroll and numbered with the things that were once imagined to be but were not. We may talk about the theory all our lives and never get a result. We may say, I'm going to paint the house green, it's now red. For 1,000 years, it'll still be green. If you're not quite sure, act as though it were true. And you get a result. Then gradually out of the result obtained by your own conscious effort, something happens, and you know that you have made the greatest discovery you ever made in your life. You will know that no matter what it looks like, everything in the universe is fundamentally all right. And you will know that every person will finally arrive at the same place. There is a destiny that shapes our end. There is a power in which we may place full confidence. There is a presence closer to us than our very breath. And there is a beauty diffused through everything, in everything, around all things. And there is something in our own soul that forever sings song of joy, feels the presence of love, melts into the atmosphere that which is universal, and finds itself in God.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.